Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday morning. We have a new time for you, and based on an adjusted schedule here at Brien, we have two articles, CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network, and then a letter.
Yeah, the blog post that the wife of the man in the article responded. I left the address off of it because I don't, regardless of where it was posted, it is a letter that's been going around Facebook that's from his wife.
All right, very good. Well, we're going to give our young pup, Nate, a chance to practice his ability to look at letters, form words, and pronounce them
in
the form of sentences. So let's get started with
the
CBN.
That's the epitome of greatness right there.
Yeah. The California church is grieving after their pastor committed suicide over the weekend. Inland Hills lead pastor Andrew Stockland died in the hospital Saturday after trying to take his own life Friday. The pastor left behind three young children and his wife. Last night, the love of my life, the father of my children, and the pastor of our incredible church took his last breath and went to be with Jesus, his wife Kayla wrote on her Instagram. She said Stockland suffered from depression and anxiety. Thank you. Sorry. And it wasn't the miracle I was hoping for, but he is now in heaven with his dad, she said. He was an amazing husband. He truly made me better, made me feel like the most beautiful girl in the world, and he loved me so deeply. Please pray for me and the boys. I don't know how I'm going to face this. I'm completely heartbroken, lost, and empty. Never in a million years would I have imagined this would be the end of his story, Stockland continued. She also encouraged anyone suffering from suicidal thoughts to get help immediately. Stockland's death has received a lot of attention online, including from fellow pastors who say they too struggle with mental health. I don't know Pastor Andrew, and I'm not familiar with his church, Scott Graham, pastor at Real Life Church at Kankakee, Illinois, wrote on Facebook. I'm sorry that he felt this way. Pastoring is hard and very lonely at times. It's hard to have genuine friends that you can be honest to without fear of being judged. My family and my church will be lifting up Inland Hills Church and Pastor Andrew's family. Depression is real, and pastors are not exempt or defective who experience it, he said. In this generation, pastors are expected to be business savvy. Instagram quotable preaching, celebrities, fully accessible, deeply spiritual. Not too young, not too old, and if a pastor doesn't quite measure up to someone's expectation at any given moment, they are given a 2 out of 5 star rating on Google. Wow. We have reduced the ministry to star ratings on Google. Let me recommend that you pray for your pastor and support your church faithfully. You are probably never going to realize what they walk through privately. Another pastor said he is praying for everyone Stockland leaves behind. I do not know this church, its constituents or pastor. However, I am a Christian, a pastor, husband, and father. My prayer, condolences, and love go out to the family left, the church left, and the close friends, all who tried to assist this heart. I wish I could just hold you all. I can't, but God is, said Jeff Burrell, lead pastor at Killoff Church.
So that's the CBN article kind of just announcing what was going on, you know, and the death of this pastor.
How long ago was this, Brian?
Just the end of August, because the post from his wife was on August 28th, and she says it's been 3 days, so August 24th, August 25th.
Is it on the third day, or was it after 3 days?
Well, so the end of August. I mean, about the time we were down at GAD. So we're not far removed from it. So the next article we have is the blog post from his wife, and I'm not sure off the top of my head who picked it up and how it's been communicated. But to my Andrew, it's only been 3 days. Nothing can take away the suffocating pain I feel now you are gone. I miss every part of you. I see you everywhere. I replay the events of that fateful day over and over again in my mind, wishing I could have done things differently. Wishing I could have held your hand one more time and prayed over you and told you how much I love you, how much I believe in you, and how God's got this too. You were right all along. I truly didn't understand the depths of your depression and anxiety. I didn't understand how real and how relentless the spiritual attacks were. The pain, the fear, and the turmoil you must have been dealing with every single day is unimaginable. The enemy knew what an amazing man you were. The enemy knew God had huge plans for your life. The enemy saw how God was using your gifts, abilities, and unique teaching style to reach thousands of lives for Him. The enemy hated it, and he pursued you incessantly, taunting you and torturing you in ways that you were unable to express to anyone.
All right, let's stop. John, what's your reaction to that paragraph?
I don't know. I don't know that it was Satan that was pursuing him. If it was me personally, I probably wouldn't even know. Is it good to feel like it's Satan pursuing me so that I can feel a little more spiritual about just the depression that I am? Yes. And is my heart broken for her? Of course. And she's speaking out of grief. I understand that. But this is also a very prevailing theological bent that a lot of churches put forth that, you know, anytime there's an attack, it's spiritual warfare. And I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit cynical and jaded, but I think sometimes we're just struggling mentally and emotionally with things, and Satan has nothing to do with it beyond the fact that Satan is a destroyer and Satan is a deceiver, and from the beginning of time, Satan's been in rebellion. So, you know, Satan is the author of all that kind of thing. That, you know, Jesus said, "You're of your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do." He was a murderer from the beginning. So Satan certainly is glad when this kind of thing happens. I'm not going to deny that. But I don't know, and I would say that his wife doesn't know at this point, if Satan was really the impetus for this action, or if it was the man himself struggling with his own, you know, personal demons. Does that matter? I don't think it matters. Am I going to fault her? No, she's struggling through grief. But I would want to address the theological bent that blames everything on spiritual warfare. But I would also offer the balanced view that the Bible does say that Satan is a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. So I've got both things that are pulling at my first reaction. But simply, I can't say one way or the other. I just can't. But I would want people to know both. I want people to be aware of both, because I would want to make sure that pastors don't think that every mental health problem is just, well, get your spiritual act in order. I think there are chemical imbalances that medical professionals can deal with. I had a very good friend in high school. There's something chemically off in his brain. When he started taking the medicine, he just improved. And I don't know how they figured that out. But it wasn't through prayer and fasting. It was through some medical tests. And so it's a very, very complex issue that involved this very, very complex brain and spirit. You know, I can't even tell you where the spirit lives. But I know that the spirit controls my thinking somehow. So I've got a physical computer called my gray matter being controlled by my spirit, because I'm told by Paul to think the right way. So somehow the spiritual world in the physical world connect in ways that I don't understand. But if you're a secular person and you totally disregard the spiritual, you're headed for trouble. And if you're a pastor and you totally disregard the other stuff, then you're headed for trouble.
I have not pastored as a senior pastor, but I know every time that I'm scheduled to preach, I encounter some type of
struggle
leading up to the sermon. And you know, the weeks that I'm not preaching, you know, things go a whole lot smoother. For me personally, it's not like, you know, I don't think it's a mental imbalance. It's just, I know, you know, when I'm preparing to speak and know that, you know, it's that time, that, you know, the couple days leading up to it, it's just like, you know, what else can go wrong?
Jack, what do you think?
We're studying Job in Sunday school. And I can't help but wonder how much God ordained this is. And I know that's a tough, tough statement to make.
Wow.
But the church congregation as a whole has an epidemic failure in the way they view their pastors. They're lifted up on pedestals. They're made to be icons of perfection. And any chinks in their armor are to be judged, criticized, and in many cases cause them to be ostracized and cast aside and ran out of churches. So these men, you, Pastor, and others, do feel like what these other pastors may comment on in the CBN article, they feel very isolated. So, I agree with John. This could be a chemical imbalance. But God is the ordainer and giver of life and the designer of who we are by DNA. God is the allower of circumstances. God is the allower of the end of life. Whether there's a personal human responsibility in this, and surely there is, this man, I don't know, it didn't describe how he took his life. We don't know if it was a gunshot, we don't know if it was pills, we don't know from the article. First time I've seen it is when it was laid in front of me. But I know from my life, I had a cousin who decided he was going to take his life. And he went to the truck, got in the truck, took a double-barrel shotgun, 12-gauge, put it underneath his chin and a stick, and released one trigger. When he wasn't dead 10 minutes later, he released the other trigger. When he wasn't dead 10 minutes later, he crawled back inside and called 911. And he's still alive today. Survived two gunshot blasts, point-blank range, with a 12-gauge shotgun to the face. That's God ordained. Whether he's a believer in God or not. So I don't want to sound callous because my heart is breaking for this lady. I mean, definitely. And here's the thing, John. Even in Job, when it was God ordained, God allowed, Satan was still the instrument by which it was carried out. And it could be Satan playing upon the natural God-designed chink in our armor of a chemical imbalance, a mental health struggle, a perception of fear, because fear comes not from the Lord. And perfect love casts out fear. Is the church failing to perfectly love their pastors? And is what this growing trend God allowed in the American church, so that we, the American church, will open our eyes and learn to love our pastors as the failed human beings that they are, yet still spiritually called to lead us. That's my gut first initial instinct. And I want to weep for this woman and her children.
What do we think about premature death?
Martin Luther didn't believe it sent you to hell. I know that.
I don't mean necessarily in the suicide. I just mean...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. The fact that if someone takes their life and they die, they say things like this. God had huge plans for you. The devil wanted to thwart it. If someone, gets in a car accident as a young person and dies, it's tragic. But there's not a stigma with that. There's not...
Jim Elliot.
Right.
The missionary. What? God's purpose for his life was to die.
Right. And so we glorify. And so what I'm concerned about is, and think about a lot, is the fact that we glorify certain things and we vilify other things, when in fact, is this just not a part of life? You live, you die. God chooses when you die.
And God allows how you die.
Right. Chooses, allows, whatever word makes you less
comfortable. I'm not talking about the timing. I'm talking about
makes you more comfortable. Right. But it's a struggle because we think in terms of this glorification idea, like, you know, he was on a great path, he had a great church, he was going to do great things for God, and now it's not going to happen. I mean, that's the way we think. That's the way we, as humans are, we glorify these things. A young person, you know, dies, and they had their whole life ahead of them. Well, did they? I mean, what God decides that. But we have kind of decided for God what a perfect life should be. In fact, we say the same thing when someone's old. Well, they've lived a good life. Well, does it make it any less painful when my wife of, you know, 35 years dies and now I'm alone? Mm-hmm. No. But we see, you know, when I go out in my yard and I cut things, some things are dying, some things are growing. It's like part of life. That's the way the curse has been on the world. It's... And the curse is God ordained, by the way. You know, God cursed the earth. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing about death and dying, that's God's idea, even though we don't want to say that. We don't like to say that, but Romans clearly says that.
Well, it's an act of mercy, because if we live forever in our sinful state, how fun is that? So, you know, I think death is our... I don't know if this is the right way to say, but it's our escape from
of course
the curse, escape from yeah. sin.
Right. And all these things run parallel to one another at the same time. That's why it's so complex. Because it might be true, it might not be true.
And we want to minimize pain.
Yeah, and we don't see pain as something. Important. We as Americans especially, we do everything we can to stay out of painful situations and to minimize it as much as possible. When someone goes into the hospital when they're older, you know, we want to sustain life and sustain
keep
life and
comfortable.
Do all these things. And sometimes I'm thinking, why? Why are we doing this?
Pastor, Doc, I guess the older gentleman in the room, for the time that you've been
more
in
mature.
Yeah, more mature too. The time you guys have been in ministry, have you seen an openness among other pastors? Because I know, like, you'll meet with some other pastors here in Fayetteville, or I'm sure you guys have friends in other ministries. Is this something
you... this is not a pastor problem. I'm sorry I hear this. I hear it. But it's a man problem. You go to your if you go, you know, to the military, you go to a shop, you don't open up and just... You know, no, you put on this facade and you act all tough and, you know, I got this kind of thing. It's not unique just to pastors, I don't think. I mean, it's in the business world. It's in the military. It's a pride thing.
Yes, but I think, and Pastor, you correct me, in the military, but I think in the business setting, I think a business person wouldn't have an issue because, you know, my brother-in-law is in business. I don't think he would have a problem if he had a contact in another company, you know, to call and say, hey, what are you guys doing over there? You know, we're struggling with this. You know, can we get some input and whatever? You know, he might not go to somebody in his company and share a problem that he's having, but, you know, he's going to go outside that. But I think with pastors, from my experience, they don't want to go to any other pastor and share because their experience in the past has been, well, you know, if I share that with that pastor, he's going to tell his friend, hey, you know, that guy over there, he's struggling. And then it's going to trickle and, you know, they're all going to gossip about it and it's going to get out. Which, again, same problem we have in the church. You know, why don't church people, why don't they share their burdens and bear each other's burdens? Because people gossip about them. But it's not any different with the pastor.
And I think it's almost what adds to that is the fact that on many theological or preferential issues, pastors are separating themselves from other churches, and so there are no confidence for them to go out and reach out and say, hey, you know, I'm struggling with this. Why? Well, because we disagree on this issue, and your church does this, my church does things this way, and so we're not, you know, we'll acknowledge that you're a church, but we're not necessarily friends because we agree to disagree on some things, and we're not okay with it.
Let's do a gut check. Let's do a gut check in the room. Hypothetical. So we'll set the condition right off the bat. Hypothetical. If I was to walk into this meeting and say, hey, for the last several days, I've contemplated the weapon sitting in my room, opening the safe, taking it out, putting it in my mouth, and putting a 9mm through my head. Am I still fit to lead the school?
I think most people would say no.
And that's why we don't come forward.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is we do a lot of things based on what people's perception of us is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep a lot of things quiet. I will make a confession. I have changed my shirt because this man mocked shirts sitting to my left. That decision based on what you said to Brian about colors of shirts. And so if I'm going to do that about a shirt, what am I going to do about something as life and death as, you know, putting a gun to my head? So the reality is the pride of what we think other people think about us is important. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, that's part of life. I mean, that's part of being with a group of guys. That's part of, you know, when you go play golf and some guy's horrible and you make fun of him. I mean, that's just part of it, right? But the camaraderie and all of that goes along. But at some point, I don't know how we break through that. And we use this word all the time. I'm authentic. But the reality is, if you're going to really be transparent and authentic, it's going to cost you something. And sometimes it's something you don't want to pay.
And it's high risk.
Well, you have to have the confidence that the person that you share the information with is not going to betray you.
Right.
Which is the problem.
It's high risk.
Or you have to decide that the person or whatever who says something about the shirt is just wrong, and I'll wear the shirt anyway. So it is high risk.
So let's kind of bounce back to Jackie's hypothetical situation.
We hope it's hypothetical.
It is hypothetical. Okay. It is hypothetical. See me in my eyes.
With the situation. Okay, there's definitely let's address the fact that you're struggling with something. Does it automatically disqualify you from being a faithful husband, from being a well-educated man who has demonstrated years and years of academic excellence both in your personal classroom and in the leadership, to know that you're struggling with something personal?
Does it disqualify him, or does that detract from? I will tell you this, knowing my own personality, that if I was struggling to that degree, I would spiral further down, because I also, if you were to walk in, Brian, and make the same statement in the hypothetical, and it was you making the statement, I don't know if I can confess to you honestly right here, right now, if I wouldn't wonder, should Brian step down for a little bit? Should Brian take a break? Should Brian be put on a sabbatical? Because I would doubt my own ability to properly lead in that mental condition. And yet I know that I could possibly do it with God's help. So then I would isolate even more. I'd be less likely to even say it. You're going to get to a point where you don't want to lay that burden on your wife. You're trying to carry that lead as a strong man. And it's going to continue to exasperate and exasperate and exasperate and build and build and build to the point where, honestly, this guy Andrew must have really been at the point of, it'd be better for me just to go to heaven because I'm only one moment away from making a complete train wreck of everything. And it'd be better for me to go home and then to Christ than to continue putting everyone else in turmoil.
Well, that's speculation, right?
That is a speculation. And I said, and I'm speaking from my own mental makeup of, I know what my mental pattern would be down this path, or at least I think I know what my mental pattern would be down this path.
And it's so difficult because even from what I read in her own letter, it sounds like to me that he may have discussed this with her.
He announced it to his church. I looked up. Right. I was looking online.
He had a sermon series leading up to this on depression.
We say all that, but the person that was the closest to him in the world said, I truly didn't understand the depths of your depression and anxiety. And it's very difficult sometimes we're empathetic a little bit, but to really put yourself in somebody else's shoes is very difficult. And, you know, I'm going to focus on what she said. I didn't really think it was as bad as this. And if that's the person who's the closest to him, then how is, like, I mean, this is just me being cynical, how is anybody going to help him? And of course, on the flip side, as you mentioned in preparing your messages, certainly I would agree that as a Christian, I believe that everything is spiritual. Nothing is just totally unspiritual. Everything is related, and Satan's a devouring lion. And so that everything I see around me has a connection to that world. So, you know, where's the balance? I mean, where are the answers? That's my thing. I'm an answers guy, you know. And then I just realized, you know, I can't remember. It's like 6 or 7 weeks ago you were talking about bearing one another's burden. And I just realized Jesus didn't say figure out somebody else's problem, help fix them. He said bear their burden. And I was specifically thinking about a certain missionary of ours who's struggling. And I thought, you want me to bear a burden? Bearing a burden means like if there's something heavy and one dude's carrying it, three other people come alongside him and carry that. You want me to help carry that burden? That is a burden I'm unwilling to carry. I'm not going to go through self-doubt. I'm not going to question my Christianity. I don't want to bear that burden. That burden is too difficult to bear. Not for me, Lord. And then I was really greatly convicted. Because then the words of Paul saying, I would be accursed from my country. So, you know, every time I see one of these, well, what's the answer? You know, what book are we going to write? You know, what book of the Bible are we going to send them to? You know, how are we going to pray for them? And I keep coming up, whiff, 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 the fastball gets by me. I don't know.
I don't know how you thought this podcast was going to go, Brian, but I mean, this is just an incredibly difficult topic.
That's what I thought. Well, looking at it, it was getting a lot of traffic on social media, and we've mentioned it in the past, but Nate and I are in a Facebook group with about 15 other youth pastors, assistant pastors, guys that we know from college, and when this came out, you know, the immediate response from all of us was like cell phone numbers, like if you need something, call me, don't go through this alone. And it almost kind of seems, you know, while it's terrible that it happened to this family, that we're almost kind of in the shift, the pendulum swing from it used to be everything was spiritual to now it's like everything is swinging over to now everything seems to be like it's more of a medical issue, and that we're kind of shifting what we say things are, you know, in dealing with depression and anxiety, that it's like, okay, so what is the proper balanced approach? And really, I think it's both. It's a let's get a few tests run and let's pray for spiritual victory, because it's going to have to be both. Just thinking, one of the friends in the group we're in asked to pray for his wife because she's been dealing with postpartum depression since January, and having, you know, two small children. I know what it was like for my wife, but at the same time, you know, it sparked a conversation. It was like, you know, I don't know what it's like to birth a child and to then no longer have the child inside of me. We have women in the church that are struggling with infertility. We have, you know, the deployments, and I'm sure there's a level of depression that comes with that. I just think it's a bigger issue than what typically is given, you know, some influence and some conversation to. But that's really all I thought this would do, is let's get us thinking about it. What's out there that we're missing when wives don't even grab a hold of how serious it is?
No, and I do agree. I think it is getting to be a larger problem. I know I follow my old my youth pastor when I was a teenager on Facebook, and someone in his family had committed suicide. But he's, you know, so now he's very aware of it, and he's been, you know, he'll post, you know, any time of someone in full time ministry commits suicide, and it's just. It's amazing how often folks in full time ministry are taking their lives.
Yeah. Well, and not even that. We've got a young man in our own ministry that puts on his, you know, his prayer card like every other week or every week.
That's every week. Yeah.
That he's praying for a friend who's battling depression, a high school student.
Right.
I know I've got kids in youth group that actively, you know, cut themselves.
No, and well, I know a retired pastor that struggled with depression, and often, you know, his weekends were miserable. You know, his Friday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I mean, he would say, you know, I feel oppressed. because, you know, and again, whether that was somewhat physical or whether that was spiritual, knowing that it was leading up to, you know, Sunday preaching, you know, but the reality was there was an oppression mm-hmm. upon him for those 2 or 3 days every week.
I had a friend, he would, you know, he told me he pastors now, but when he was praying to get out of the army, and you remember those days, Pastor, when you're, do I leave this career to go into the pastorate? Do I leave this career to serve God? Do I the security of this? As he was praying through it, he said that every day he drove to Fort Campbell, every day he was driving in the gate, and I forget how he described it, but there's anything like a large creek or a river or something and a bridge type of thing. And he said almost every single morning as he was driving in praying, as he got near that location, an overwhelming thought to drive the car off the bridge crossed his mind. And he would actually literally have to fight the temptation to just, you know what? Instead of struggling with all this and trying to make my mind, it's just better just go to Christ and drive off the bridge. Mm. So sometimes, yes, it is a very real satanic attack.
Well, I think it's important that we, because as you mentioned before we opened the podcast, not everybody knows. I mean, we can't assume that people know what's right. But when I was in high school, a girl in our school committed suicide, and my band director was Catholic. And so he was very careful to say that he did not believe that she committed suicide. Because, you know, to their mind, if you commit suicide, that means you cannot be redeemed. You're going to hell. So we need to just clear the table and say that has no biblical basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you think of any verse that would support that?
No, there's no verse that would support that.
So, you know, it's tragic, it's terrible, but we do believe that believers can take their lives, right?
There's no reason to think that that sin would preclude you from being saved.
Yeah, because I mean, I know it's not the same conversation, but what about self-sacrifice? The soldier that lays down on the landmine to save his, you know, his comrades. He essentially took his own life, but because the purpose is different, and I think that's, you know, no one would right. be in that category, but like, oh yeah.
And of course, that has no bearing on your salvation, because right. salvation is whether you believe in Christ, whether you believe Jesus is the Christ, buried, risen again, coming again. Just, it's been, yeah.
Go ahead, Nate.
I was just going to say, I know for me that, Pastor, you brought up the point that you would have to have full trust in a person. I thought of two individuals that I knew from college, one in Colorado, one just in Greenville. And then, you know, I believe that God's really blessed me with mentors that I can trust, too, with some personal things. And I can only, you know, I know that we brought up the point, like, you know, Jack brought up the point, like, if I'm struggling with this, I'm going to lose my job if I communicate something like that. But I feel like it's really, really important that you have somebody you can talk to.
Well, soldiers think that way. If you go to mental health services, it's going to get documented in your records. It's going to prevent promotion. It's going to... It's going to stop things. They it's there. The CEO who's in the secular business world, if I go to the therapist and it gets out,
mm-hmm.
stockholders are going to lose confidence. Mm-hmm. This is, and I would say this isn't even a more a male thing. I think this is just a human thing. This is yeah. the idea that we have this self-perception of being so strong, and people have to be strong. And I don't know anything about their marriage. We could only postulate, taken off of her words. I didn't understand the depth. I didn't understand that. I'm sure she's been as well-meaning as my wife has been at points when I was low. And she's like, oh, you're strong. You can get through this. You know, the words of encouragement, very loving, probably very, very true. But
well, what do you say?
I mean, first time, yeah.
What do you say to somebody who's struggling with things that you can't even figure out yourself?
You know what I'm saying?
What's the option? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
you say you're going through Job.
Jonathan, with your question, I think some of it is just for them to vent and get out, I think helps. Because I know our counseling class, Brian, probably one of the few things we did learn was that that empathy at the very beginning or through those first sessions can be a huge help, and you're basically just listening at that point.
Yeah, but let's be a little more biblical with it, because Romans says, "Rejoice with them yes. that rejoice, weep with them that weep." And I have no idea. It's not come across my desk yet. But if a student came in and they're just upset and depressed, I mean, the biblical instruction would be, doesn't matter. Be upset with them.
Yeah. Well, that's the tough. We're not good at that. Because just think about our congregation. Think about ourselves. Think about the culture we live in. When someone else is going through something that's especially self-made, we're very quick to point that out. So if this was a redneck kid who was being stupid on a four-wheeler, well, that's what you get for doing that, you know. But if someone comes along and they're enduring pain that we don't want to endure, but we've been given a command to bear one another's burdens, to weep with them that are weeping and rejoice with them that are rejoicing, our typical answer to that is, no, thank you. You know, fine, how you doing? That's the way we do church. And so this bear one another's burdens command and all of the things that Christians are supposed to be, I don't think we really play those out in reality. No. I don't think we do a good job of that. And it's a human thing, I think.
I think it's them. I'd love to know, Jonathan, what the culture was like 400 years ago before this thing called the Enlightenment and the rise of humanism started to creep into society as a whole, where man was the epitome of all that could be.
Okay, let's go to Job.
Job
is on the ash heap. Job, literally, when he finally opens his mouth, 7 days of silence, he finally opens his mouth and says, I curse the day I was born. I wish I had never been born. I wish I had never been conceived. I wish that God would blot that day out so much that the stars had never shined upon that day. In utter despair, yeah. Right? And his friends say, well, you know, you wouldn't be going through this if you just get your heart right with God and quit sinning.
Yeah. So
over and over and over again. It is not new. Except for here's the thing. When his wife said, curse God and die, she at least understood, or there was at least some kind of perception that we shouldn't take our own life. Or at least in that time of the culture, Job had this perception that he shouldn't take his own life, but he did beg God to go ahead and end his life.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and establish the end of the boundary of this.
Well, we see that with Elijah, we see it with Jonah, where
yeah.
they're like, okay, God, just take me.
Well, and with Jonah, it's the same thing that plays out, because Jonah didn't want forgiveness for the Ninevites.
Yeah.
Because we believe that compassion and mercy is for me, and for everybody else, they get their just desserts.
Well, even you talked about physician-assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm. That's a rough one.
Mm-hmm. What do you do? What do you do when they're keeping you alive, John, so that you can be on a catheter and on a bag and on an IV and lay in your own
and decimating families' finances?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
You know, that's tough stuff.
Yeah, I've thought on more than one occasion, man, I don't want that.
And the typical just reaction to that and whatever is just, I don't know, I just doesn't feel good enough to me. You know, the Republican talking point, the conservative Christian talking point. I mean,
well, we didn't have any answers for any listeners.
Well, but I think we do.
I think we do, yeah.
I think we do, Brian. I think... Here's the thing I think that we can take away. Number one, we can never know why God is allowing someone to struggle. We can never know to what boundary God has bound Satan as the possible instrument of that struggle, or to what degree God has allowed a sovereignly designed chink within us that's meant for us to become one body, that my strength is given to your weakness and your strength is given to my weakness. I think that we have established the fact that we as a church lack a huge understanding of how my faith is supposed to play against your faith. And the grace that is bestowed upon you and the grace that is bestowed upon me should create within us this bond of love to such a degree that it casts out fear, that we can both have a sound mind of confidence that you and I could literally sit down, share a burden to an incredible degree without a loss of confidence that we are both still fit to serve. And I think that's the answer, listener, is that we have to absolutely, fundamentally, deeply embrace this concept. Every human being living today is a sinner. Every human being living today has struggles, and we are not people of love. And until we're to love to that depth, people are still going to struggle to know that we're Christ's disciples.
And the command to love one another, bear one another's burdens, weep with those that weep, rejoice with those that rejoice, is not dependent on, you know, getting all the facts. You know, whose fault is it? Who's to blame? That's none of that's mentioned. You know, fixing the problem, you know, creating solutions, writing books, none of that's mentioned. The command is, no, you're to do this.
Loving them through the perception that is their reality. That's something that you told me 16 years ago when I first came here, Steve. I think that's still the answer.
Well, I would hope that in this room that there would be the closeness that we could share a burden like that and not fear the reprisals of I'm going to lose my job, I'm not going to be allowed to lead the music Sunday, or I'm going to be jerked out of my seat, or...
Right.
Or that. I would hope that I don't know who this man felt confident talking to and all that. I mean, I can tell you I haven't had suicide thoughts, and I don't struggle with anxiety, and I don't say that boastfully. I mean, because John, I think that you're exactly right. Having raised Austin, I know that there are chemical imbalances that are legitimate.
Yeah.
And I've seen them with my own eyes in a day and in a week, and so... And I've seen ladies that have taken particular medications to help them with postpartum, things like that, and got the victory for a minute of time or a window of time. So this is phenomenally complex.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important, you know, we need to be wise, but we can't just dismiss out of hand professionals who help people like that. Because my tendency, I'm not going to speak for the rest of you, my tendency is to say, it's all a bunch of mumbo jumbo, the only answer is Jesus, you know, just no. Hold to Jesus.
Sure.
You know, I need to be careful I don't do that, because there are people who spend time studying these things, and they actually, I have to recognize, they know more about how the brain works and things work than I do.
Perhaps.
Yeah. And guarded. I'm guarded because I realize that there's a whole history there with Freud and a bunch of garbage. I understand that.
There's a significant difference between those that have the ability to prescribe medications and those that are just merely listeners who collect money without focusing
right.
on solutions. And there's a giant difference.
Yeah.
I had a church member visiting a therapist for 2 years. Well, talk to me about the progress you've made in overcoming this fear. Well, I'm the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the mechanic couldn't fix your truck, you wouldn't give him 2 years of a chance to fix the truck. You know? So there is a degree to which we are
right,
weeping
right.
with them weeping, but at the same time we're trying to, like, why are you depressed?
Yeah.
Why are you anxious? Have you created expectations that are unrealistic? Do you have a glide path of church growth that you think you should have a mega church? You know, I don't know. I'm not here to criticize the man. But typically there's reasons why you're depressed. There's reasons why you're anxious. And so there is a degree to which we're weeping with those who weep, and there is a degree which we're trying to help them get maybe a better perspective on things
right.
that is more biblical, more realistic, more appropriate,
You know, you thought you'd be at this stage of your life. You thought you'd be at this whatever. You thought you'd have this much money in the bank. You don't have. Is that why? Why are you depressed?
This certainly is a balance, and it's difficult to.
Which, and historically, the Independent Baptist Church has been dead set against the medical side of this. Because in my college training, they had us reading books on disregarding the Christian psychologist who was going to try to, you know, split the aisle, as it were, of science on this side and scripture on this side. Because they didn't want you going down that path. Now, they may have, in the last, you know, 10 years changed, but...
But we don't do that with diabetes. See, that's my struggle, is that we don't do that with diabetes. If someone has diabetes, we say to them, you're going to have to modify your diet, you're going to have to start exercising more, you may have to consider insulin. You know, that world of Indy Fundy is willing to do that with every organ of the body, save the brain.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would be very guarded as far as you're talking about someone, when you're meeting with someone to listen and talk and come up with solutions. You know, biblical solutions, yes. You know, Paul tells us in many ways how to deal with the ways to think. So Paul recognizes that there's this organ called the brain, and there's these thought patterns that are important. In Romans 12, he tells us how to think. He also tells us that comfort one another with these words. What are these words? Jesus is coming back again. Mm-hmm. Well, what is that? That's a future expectation to get out of the trouble that I'm in.
Yeah.
For the Christian, that's the kingpin.
Well, if you're struggling with suicide or depression, let us know. I'm not saying that flippantly. I would email with you in a minute. I would have a conversation with you in a minute. I would keep your situation in utmost confidence. I would positively not exploit the situation in any way, shape, or form. And sometimes someone just needs the confidence that there's someone that will listen to them and help them through this. Thanks for listening. And may God comfort this dear woman in the loss of her husband. 3 children. Without a father. Suicide can be a very selfish thing. And I'm not saying it was in this case, but there are times when it is utterly just selfish to take your own life, to absolve yourself of the responsibilities of life. So we pray that God would bring someone into these children's lives and into this woman's life to help fill the gap and meet the need. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.